this winter in Quebec, I was at my little cabin. I have a little cabin where I go practice in not too far from Montreal in the woods. And around it, actually, there's, I think, something like close to 200 kilometers of cross-country skiing. There's a lot of Crown Lake land. So land that belongs to the Queen, apparently. So I'm neighbor to the Queen. And I have just a little lot with a little funky, adorable cabin. So this winter, one afternoon after practice, I decided to go cross-country skiing. And there's been less snow this winter, or at least there had been in January less snow. And I decided to do, you know, some loop. And, you know, I was looking at trees and going around. And anyway, at some point, it was getting a little darker. And I couldn't, the path had disappeared. It had disappeared a few times, but that time it had really disappeared. I think the little skidoos that make the tracks were not able to go through some of the springs and rivers and things. So anyway, at some point it's, you know, it was 5 o'clock, getting a little darker, and I didn't know where I was anymore. And it was an interesting situation, and I had lost my water, and I didn't have my headlamp because I thought I was going on a little loop, and I couldn't recognize where I was, and it was maybe one of the first time for me that this was happening. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go to the highest point there, and it was hard to get there because there was, you know, these skis, they get stuck under pieces of wood and things, and you have to go on top, and I was totally wet, and it was getting darker and darker. And when I reached the highest point, it didn't make sense at all what I was seeing. And it was very interesting. I could see how my practice was very important at that point, because I was, you know, it felt really important to actually be very attentive. And also very non-judgmental, you know, like non-desiring something else, non-reactive. It felt like I needed a very calm, stable mind to actually be able to read the little that I could read about what was going on. And at some point, it felt pretty dark. And anyway, the story is, I found, it seemed like I could see in the snow a little thing like this. It was snowing, so there was no moon, but I could see just this, in the darkness, just this slightly little thing of snow. And it seemed like maybe it had been somebody who had walked there in snow shoes at some point, you know, and that was the only lead I had, so I had to follow this, and it went up and down, and anyway... But I kept thinking, well, that's the only thing I had. And it felt like it was really good to be able to be really kind with oneself, you know. So inside, there was a lot of like, that's not an easy situation, my love. You know, let's be very attentive. Yeah, that's our best lead. Let's try. Oh, we don't see it anymore. Okay, what next? And really, and it was very interesting to see the mind. Like, it was often on the verge of like, okay, that's enough, you know, I've been a good boy, you know, now show me the road, you know, and I was like, that's not going to be really helpful, you know, we need to save all the energy, mental energy we have here, and be very attentive, very careful. And in the end, at some point I saw the light, you know, of a cabin at some distance, and then the story got boring because I just had to follow the light, you know, I knew there would be a cabin, and but it was really interesting to see it was not much, you know, I'm just telling you a little story of my winter, you know. But what I liked was to see the mind in practice, and what qualities would be helpful, you know, having opinions about self and what self should have done, or like, was not really helpful here. What was helpful was present moment quality awareness, you know, and non-reactivity. And so just one situation to apply like what we're actually developing here, because to me that was exactly it. That was not sitting on a cushion, but it was what's actually happening, what is the appropriate response, you know, what is the best mind. So the mind, it seemed like it was a good idea to have a certain amount of calm, because the absence of calm would have made it impossible to read what was there, you know, and a certain amount of curiosity about the situation, you know, to be engaged, you know. And so that's one situation where a mind that is both calm and engaged is welcome. Another situation would be something extremely pleasant happening, you know, and the capacity to imagine a mind that can actually be there to totally meet calm enough, you know, not like, oh my God, this is great, where's my camera, where's so-and-so, like, I wish they were here, oh my God, they're not here, they're never here when it's time, you know. It's like, wow, there's something happening that is quite particular, let's show up for it, you know. So a certain amount of calm and engagement required. It makes me think of Lila Kate Willer, who's a Dharma teacher, a very good teacher. I had the chance to teach with her a couple of months ago, and she told this story from kind of the Buddhist mythology that I had never heard before. And you might know of this or not, but she was saying to us, the, you know, meditators, she was saying, there's a kind of flower in Buddhist stories that blooms only one time in a whole expansion and contraction of the universe. So that's a significant amount of time, right? And so that flower blooms only once. It's called Udumbara flower. And it's kind of just appears like this in the middle of space, you know, unique form, scent and shape. And, you know, what kind of mind would you like to have if that was to, you know, if you were lucky enough to be there when, you know about the flower, you know, it happens once every, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of years, you know, one just once. And you happen to be there. To me, that when she told that story, that what came to mind was like, wow, I would like to have a mind that is extremely quiet and plugged in, you know, not dissociated, not quiet and, you know, kind of dumb is one version you could, you know, like removed, or like I would want to really be there and take it in, you know, this unique, like, and be able to really say after I was there, you know, like I was really there, present, you know. So anyway, Lila was telling this story. And then very skillfully, I thought, later we were practicing, and then we were all like sitting like this, you know, practicing. And then she said, imagine you are this flower, this unique, because it's the case, you know, in the whole story of the universe, only one arising like this. It lasts only for a little while. You know, how would you meet this event happening of you, you know, the Udumbara flower, which I thought brought some of the qualities that we try to talk about in mindfulness practice, you know, a kind of great care, a particular attention, not like a kind of like half there kind of presence, but like a full presence that is balanced, in equilibrium, you know, like really able to take in what is happening. And then she said, which I thought was even more skillful, she said, what if your present mind state or body state was that flower, even if it's anxiety that is there, even if it's ache that is there, what if it was that unique arising? How would you meet that, you know? Like this surprising shape, not that you had an idea about the Udumbara flower, it was going to be like this, like that, and then it shows up, but it's something a little strange and achy, you know, but you're invited to actually be there because it's going to happen only once, you know, and to tune in, you know. So to me, talks about like the quality of presence we want to invite or cultivate, tend towards, you know, that it's not always available, you know, but certainly cultivatable. So I like to think about these qualities we're developing, how they can be always welcome and useful in any situation. So imagine a psychophysical system, like just this one, you know, just this little system here, and infuse in that system care, kindness, you know, honesty, quality presence, how it's going to influence that system, that there is awakening, you know, like consciousness, curiosity for what is actually unfolding. Do you agree with me that it would be helpful in that little system that this would be, these qualities would be present that we're developing here? In the same way, for me, if I think, imagine in a relationship, any relationship, you know, family relationship, or you know, chosen family or imposed family relationship, if we put it like this, you know, that there would be care and honesty and courage and the mindfulness there. Like, this is how it's unfolding. You know, if there is conflict or if there is joy, you know, you meet friends that you haven't seen and are delighted to see for one evening and be fully present to the other, and to, if it's a group, the group, you know. So in a relationship in like this, like that, you know, imagine a group like here, when there is, let's imagine, complete absence of kindness, how that would work, you know, 100 and some people in a space like this, but infuse in their consideration, respect, care, attention, you know, how it, what kind of field it can create. And so that's what we're doing here. It's these qualities also... we say what they do is they tend to, when we bring them in, invite them in, always without forcing, without demanding that they're there, but recognizing their value, what happens is that it tends to lower what we call the hindrances. The hindrances are the reactivity, not wanting what is there, or the clinging of like, I want more of this and I want this instead of that, like this is being reduced. These are difficult mind states to be in when you're in somewhere and you, or in some situation, you think that something else should be happening and it should be happening now, and why is it, you know, instead meeting what is happening. Oh, this is what is happening here. Yeah. And so the hindrances are reduced. So more we develop these qualities, the more there's energy available for us. So not too much energy, not too little energy, just the right amount of energy. Imagine you're learning a new task. You know, you get a new job and the learning curve is steep, but the mind has both calm to it and engagement, you know, instead of producing doubt and fear of failure. And, you know, imagine it produces curiosity for this, how the learning is improved, you know, the capacity for learning. And so how the hindrances are lowered, there's more and more of the right amount of energy that is present. And and instead of being like scattered or agitated, the mind is able to really tune in. So this is what we're practicing here, these qualities. And they're actually the right qualities for another kind of situation, the situation of insight. So a deeper reading of reality, not based on my, you know, what I've learned or my current understanding or expectations again, but a deeper reading, what is actually happening here now. And so these qualities are welcome for that. Like a few years ago, and I think I might have mentioned it here, I can't remember, but again, Catherine McGee was saying, and I thought it was so simple, it always stayed on my mind, like it's there in a daily way for me. She said, transformation does not happen in a rigid mind. Transformation happens in a fluid, malleable, pliable mind. You know, imagine somebody saying like, okay, I always do this. I'm so tired of doing this. Like, now I'm going to stop doing this. I hate it when I do this, and I shouldn't do this anymore. And what are the chances of this stopping? You know, it seems to me like the mind is so rigid, like that. But if somebody else comes, or the same person comes and is like, wow, I'm doing this again. Like, let me actually tune in. What's happening when I do this? I want to know in a deeper way what's going on in me that I do that. What's, you know, I'm curious about this because I think I'm going to do it again. You know, so next time I actually want to really be awake. Like, I want to know when this thing clicks in the mind. When is it born? Is there a birthing moment? Because usually I catch it at the end, you know, when I abused somebody else, or, you know, or you know, if, you know, I've paralyzed or shut down again, you know, like, I want to actually see this earlier in the process. So that's already like a bit of a pliable mind. It's a mind that is engaged, that is non-reactive. It's not hating. It's curious about what is happening. And it's discerning. It can recognize, you know, it's not like, oh, it's all good. We're all one. It's all love. You know, it's not like this is like some things are creating troubles in my life, you know, for me, maybe for others. So there's a discernment, but it's not judgment. It's not added with a layer of like hatred or aversion of judgment. And so that's, again, this to me is the field that we're in here. And that allows for compassion to arise. So that's the pliable mind, the malleable mind that can actually meet reality and learn how to respond. And I think in the text of the weekend, I was talking about the creative mind. To me, that's what it is. A fluid and creative mind is a mind that is able to take in reality and dives under assumptions, you know. And so that creates space for new response that are more spontaneous, creative, based in a deeper reading of situation, not habitual response, you know, but another way to respond, because the quality of the reading, the quality of the feedback is allowed. You know, I can feel more deeply what's happening, and more maybe broadly. Classically, there are five, and maybe later I can give you the list, or it's findable online, the classic list. It's a good one. So one of the qualities I'll talk about that is in this field, I want to talk a little bit more about curiosity or interest, because in Dharma, in Buddhist psychology, it refers to something precise, and so that we've been inviting here this morning, but it's good to actually name it more clearly. So this quality of mind is called Dhamma Vichaya in Pali. Dhamma is a Dhamma with a small d. A Dhamma with a big D would represent maybe in this context here the teachings of the Buddha. So the Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha. The small d means phenomena. And vichaya means investigation, being curious about phenomena. So it's a particular angle that I find that I like. I like because for two reasons. I see the usefulness of it, and also the immediate liberating aspect of it for me. You might not respond like this. You'll see for yourself. But Dhamma vichaya, or investigation of phenomena, is a way that we remove the glasses of me, my, I, and things become phenomena that are observable, feelable, that are really existing, but they're not seen from the perspective of me, not mine. So it's not so much my fear, for example, it's fear. Fear arose in this field. There is fear, it's present. If it's my fear, often it makes everything very complex, you know, or my calm. This is what I was talking about clinging. In Buddhist psychology, clinging is misery. is the expression, suffering is when the mind clings to something. Sometimes clinging is like, I want more of, I don't want to lose. Do you recognize something in this, in you? You would not say it like this in a conversation, but that's what's happening inside, you know, like, oh my God, I need this now, you know. And so this is a state of mind that is difficult. One subtle aspect of clinging is a kind of owning, appropriating, taking for self something that is in nature, you know. So it's a, can be a gross, but also a very subtle kind of misery that we create for ourselves. In Buddhist practice, we kind of, from the get-go, we could say, sometimes we talk about this later in practice, I these days I like to bring it early on, you know, like even with, if somebody's starting meditation, I like to present this. Oh, Dhamma Vichaya, investigation of phenomena. What is going to happen on the cushion or in the walking this weekend? There's nothing personal about it. Yes, in a way you could say it's absolutely personal. It's your mind that is agitated. It's your sadness about the past, or it's your, you know, capacity to gather the mind and stay with the breath. Yes, but we could also decide to see it in a very different way. Do you agree that there is the phenomena of mind being gathered or scattered? And this is something that is really happening and can be known, you know? There is the passage in the mind that thoughts that are benevolent, helpful, that accompany ones, you know, are freeing. And there is the passage in the mind that thoughts that are, you know, create more suffering and stress, right? And so all these, there's the phenomena of ease or dis-ease, comfort and discomfort, the phenomena of pleasantness, unpleasantness. And so I like it because it kind of, in a way, it can give a break of oneself from oneself, you know. But it's not going towards annihilation, you know, like I don't want to exist. And it's a middle path between an extreme of like, this is all about me, or the extreme of nothing counts, you know. There's things happening, they're worth being known, and they might not be that personal. You know, first we all happen to be here because of something very impersonal that was called the Big Bang. You know, there was nothing personal about that. And that's partly why you're here, like mainly why we're here. And then there was a series of events, like biological and many events. None of them were personal. You know, they were not against or for you. They just happened. And so suddenly we find ourselves here with a biology, a mind, neurons, digestion, you know, and we're trying to make our work our way into this, you know. And so so that's one of the angles of the practice, is sitting here and noticing what. So one way to talk about this is human nature. Here we come and we're discovering human nature. It takes all different little stories here and there. It's unfolding in different ways. But the fabric or the material, the props, the are all like kind of public domain, you know, the, you know, whatever it is, hormones or you know, thoughts or states of mind are all things that happen to all human beings. And so here we discover how it's unfolding in this being, but we take it just a little bit less personal. So actually we can bring this at the beginning of the path, and the end of the path is kind of a major not taking it personal, you know, saying things are happening, you know. So imagine this ease happens, you know, you go and there's a diagnosis that comes. So we'd imagine that for a number of us that has happened personally or really close to home in the loved one, you know, and how when we make it like, why me? This becomes terrible. You know, like the universe being against me or doing this to me, or God, or if there's no God, it's also problematic, you know, because who's to blame? And, or, you know, like, whose fault is it? And from the Buddhist perspective, is like, things do happen because of conditions, you know. And can we bring careful attention to what is happening and take care of it because suffering can be created in the mind, but also equally liberation can be created in a mind, of freedom inside a mind. You know, mind can create trouble for itself, or it can free itself. It can actually do this to others also, to a big extent, you know. It can create oppression, and it can create also protection. And so we're invited in this practice to pay attention to this system, how it creates trouble for itself. So that's why we just sit and walk and sit and walk, paying attention, just so it becomes revealed, you know, how, let's say we're thinking we are going to walk back and forth for a few minutes or sit in the bench park and just move the attention in the body. And then it becomes a big, the mind creates a trouble, no? Like, oh, I really want to be somewhere else, or somebody, I want to be this person over there, you know? This is the person I want to be. Why did I get to be this person here, you know? And we can see all the ways that the mind creates trouble. Or you're, let's say you're walking, because I'm using this example because I've seen this for myself a number of times, and I've heard it described by meditators also. One is just simply walking, reaches the end of the path, turns around, and notice that somebody else is there, you know? And suddenly, self arises. How do I look? You know, am I a good or a bad meditator? You know, will I make it to the theater group who meets secretly? Or will I not be admitted in? You know, I'm joking here, but just this, like, you turn and suddenly you have a sense of moi, you know, suddenly owning lens. It was not there before. Before there was just stepping. And suddenly there's like, it's me. It means something about me. Wah-ha, you know? Do you recognize? Am I alone in that realm? You know? Another place where I've seen it so many times, it's now it's cute and makes compassion arises, but on residential retreats, when you sleep over and you, so meal is prepared for you, which is a good thing, but there's always a salad at the end of the food line. And so when there's like 100 people like here all in the food line and you serve your salad, there's a chance that one piece of salad is going to drop on the side, you know. And I don't know for you, but for me, it's so interesting how a self arises, like a unworthy, my worth, you know, goes, if I had a good sit, you know, my worth is really high, you know, like I was quiet, I was calm, the mind was open. Then I serve salad and I drop one piece of lettuce and then I'm worthless. You know, at the moment of dropping the piece, I'm like, oh my God, everybody saw me, I can't even serve salad, you know. You know, I failed my, you know, serving salad training when I was six, you know. I'm putting more words to it, but there's a sense suddenly of like unworthiness, you know. And I can see this arise, how suddenly there's an owning and a meaning given to reality, yeah. And so here we're developing a mind that is both engaged with reality and calm, or gathered, unified, in order to see all these little things that appear in the psyche, how they play out. So we do this for that little system, but the idea will be also to bring it to all the other systems that we're part of, because none of them are personal in a way. You know, if you take the Dharma point of view, none of them are personal. This one is not so personal. It happened that there was a meeting between two people, the birth of a child and a culture and, you know, whatever privilege or lack of or absence of, or, and it created this whole thing. And it's really important to take care of this thing. You know, it's tender, it's sensitive, it can be troubled, it can also experience ease. Nothing personal about it. Nothing personal about this either. It's definitely worth being attentive to community living, how it, how we can impact each other, how we can create trouble for each other, how we can support each other. Being really attentive to this, bringing honest, equanimous, careful attention, you know, to the ways that this being plays out. This being, you know. The different ways that we're being, and on the planet, you know, this big system, also impersonal, but really existing, really happening, can create support, can create also, devastation. And so the same kind of mindfulness, careful, non-reactive awareness is welcomed in any field. That's my sense of practice these days, you know. Every situation I find myself in is worthy of great care, you know. Not blaming, not hating, not, but really being attuned, discerning, yeah. So I've named a number of things here today that are, a number of instructions about practice, but also a number of things that are, I think some things that we usually classify in deep dharma, you know, like deeper things like the non-personal nature of what's happening, without falling into a kind of disregard, indifference, dissociation. Yeah, because the practice we've been talking about is a practice of a lot of intimacy. I don't know if you've noticed, but we're not distancing ourselves from stuff. In this practice, we're coming closer to things. We're coming closer to sensations in the body, closer to emotions or mind states. We actually want to be awake in the middle of them, awake in the middle of impatience, awake in the middle of calm or compassion or care or friendliness. Yeah, so coming in closer and not taking personal at the same time, the two together. That's kind of a strange mix, but very rich mixed, I think, very powerful mixed. The other thing that I've talked about is the ephemerality of experiences. The ephemerality of experiences, when it's noticed, when it's felt, when it's noticed with a really high quality presence, it's deeply touching. That's also another way to talk about insight. When we're deeply touched by the arising and passing of phenomena, this is a very powerful thing that can happen in the human mind. So here, as we pay attention, as we sit, it's not regular old attention, like, okay, I'm kind of there, I'm a little bored, but it's going to ring the bell at some point, you know. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is like something that needs probably to be developed over years, a quality presence that can be sustained like a few seconds stuck together, like moments together, you know. The mind that doesn't leave the moment, you know. Come and think about later when I'll be home tonight. And every time we exit like this, there's a losing the chance of the conditions for insight, not to blame ourselves, but just to know what's happening, you know. And so many of us, we value a lot our thoughts, no? And so we want to take a little break. Okay, the mindfulness, yeah, I want to, but I want to think about next week or think about my life, you know. If you pay attention, you'll notice, or that's what I'm noticing these days, that every time I think about my life or life, I'm actually abandoning life. Every time I think about myself, I'm abandoning myself. You know, because I have to create a story. The Pascal tonight, what will he eat? You know, I have to create a Pascal, project it in tonight. Or, you know, do you see what I mean? When we're thinking about ourselves, we're actually not there. We've abandoned life and the moment. And so in this practice, we maybe learn to be less enamored with the story of moi, you know, and just come back to what's actually happening here, you know? And so that's a factor of mind called renunciation. Renunciation happens with clear seeing when we notice, maybe for ourselves, don't believe me, but you might notice in the next few days or that when you think about yourself, you're actually, that's how it appears to me, I'm actually creating a story of a certain Pascal. And while I'm projecting this, there's no one attending to this life here, you know. All resources are taken for creation, a generation of mind, you know. And so it seems more wise these days for me to actually attend to what's happening here now, you know. Or if I do go visit some past events, let's say, that needs revisiting, I'll go with a lot of present moment awareness. So let's say something happened. Imagine something happened yesterday with some, usually it's an encounter with somebody that didn't go right, you know, where I'm to blame or they did something. So maybe I go visit this back. Now, let me think about this. How do I feel? What's alive now? How's the breathing now that I'm thinking about this? Oh, heartbeat is coming up, you know, triggering. Oh, triggering. Hard to think about this. Oh, shame. Wow, shame. Wow, hot. Oh, shame. Is it, you know? So present time awareness, at least, if you depart with stories about self in another time than now, it might be useful to think about this in this way. I don't know what happened, but I was going to talk about ephemerality, the thing, the fact that things appear and disappear. And so as we sit, of course, there's all the experience of the body that we'll notice appears and disappears from experience, right? Like, I'm not trying to say, again, that your belly disappears. Really, I don't know that. But it disappears from experience. And the sense of self also is flickering, like when you turn and suddenly you feel self-conscious. Self just arose in this moment, you know? In the same way, everything is flickering like this. Perceptions of time, perceptions of future. I named this earlier. And identities also are appearing and disappearing. I don't know if I was joking, but I meant it also really when I was saying the special group of people from A to E. Like, suddenly you... Did you notice that you existed in that group or not? That you belonged or not to that group? I mean, that's just a little game. Like, that's irrelevant. But just to see how... I don't know if you caught that. If you, but there's this, you know? But there's many identities. Like, one of the identities that I would like to have being fluid, like appear and disappear, is that sometimes I cling to... I noticed... Recently, I'll tell you the story, is the identity of the teacher. So my friend Anushka, who's a teacher, I don't know if she comes here, she's a great teacher, Anushka Fernando Poulet. She says, imagine like I'm really clinging to the identity of the teacher, and then I go to the airport after the retreat here, and they say, you're sitting in 26B. And she said, imagine I was to say like, no, I sit in front. Like, people look at me, I don't sit with people, I'm the teacher. No. Well, a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, a little more, I went to a retreat. And in the first 24, maybe a little more hours, it was so interesting to watch my mind that wanted to position myself. I was a retreatant, you know, but I was happy that I got noticed, that I had acquired an identity that I was rigid about, you know, because I was sitting there and I was like, but you know, like if I had the chance to have the microphone, I would have said to everybody, like, I'm not just a retreatant, I teach these retreats, you know. and so I was sitting there and there was this thing, I don't know, it would arise in particular situation when it's like, so all you retreatants, and I was like, yeah, but I'm not just a retreatant, I'm... It was totally out of place, you know. It was my job to actually notice this arising, the craziness of it. Be tender, compassionate and clear, you know. you know, Pascal, your teacher is a function, you know, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. It's not the description of any you there, you know. And we've done that in some ways, no? We've taken identities and then we get mixed up when these identities disappear, you know. If I'm the other half of somebody and this other half goes, you know, and I really believed I was the other half, you know, suddenly I'm going to have a, you know, it's good to notice earlier in the process that identities are moving like this, yeah. And so, for example, sometimes I'm a son, but I'm not always a son, the son of somebody, you know. I'm the son of somebody, it's kind of flickering, you know, it appears and disappears. Sometimes it should appear more, or sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm the bad son, sometimes I'm the good son, you know. It might be projected on me, but mainly I'm self-sufficient, you know. And I can see these appear and disappear and notice this with quality awareness and be aware of this, you know. And sometimes people lay identities on me and, you know, whatever qualities or not, you know, and it's actually good to notice this, notice how an identity is placed on you, or I place identities on people that, you know, I assume they are ways that they are not because of different features that they're showing or something. And so in mindfulness, I want to be aware of this, my assumptions. That basically what I'm questioning is my assumptions. And now it's making me unfree, creating suffering for myself and others. And so in the sitting and walking, that's partly what we're going to be attending to. As we sit here, we'll be, you know, the best meditator, the worst meditator, the one that doesn't belong, the one that belongs. And we'll do this to others also. Maybe. It would be good to be aware of it if we do, you know. How we'll think, what is this person doing here, you know. Is a thought that we might think is real, you know, that this person shouldn't be here, you know? Let's say that, or am I on my own here? So mindfulness, that's the field of mindfulness, is questioning assumptions and seeing how partly assumptions and perceptions are real or not. One perception that we always often have, many of us, is the perception of being separate, you know, the world on one side and me on the other. Do you have this feeling sometimes? That I'm separate from the world? And with a closer look, we might see more and more clearly that this is a mirage, an image of the Buddha. A mirage, like it appears a certain way, but maybe it's actually not. A friend of mine was asking a couple of weeks ago, like, what's this thing about emptiness in Buddhism? Like, I'm reading about books about this, not somebody who practices, I think, and was saying, tell me a few words about this emptiness, it's crazy. You know, I was like saying, well, basically it's just empty of a self, of a core essential self, you know, like, and I said, I'm going to use this image because he said to me later that it was a really good image, so I'm really proud of my image. So now I'm very stressed. I want you to have a particular experience of my image. And I can't control that. So that's stressful. I really want you to see my image as a really good image. Yes? Do we agree on that? Okay. So the really good image is, you imagine in a tapestry, the unicorn or the woman combing her hair in the tapestry. You imagine she really believes that she's apart from the tapestry. You know, she really said, you know, the unicorn said, no, I'm not, like, I know there's a tapestry, it's the environment, and I'm outside of the tapestry, but when you start to pull on the little thread, suddenly it's completely revealed that the unicorn was not apart from the tapestry, but completely in. Do you see what I mean? So we have a perception that we're a unicorn, you know, some kind of like something that is standing out, you know, and it might be in the sense that don't belong, you know, like everybody made it to humanity except me, you know, or that I'm more than the rest or different. but we're all made of the same, we're made of, I mean, in physics, you would say maybe of the universe, you know? And so in paying attention, to me, that's amazing that in just paying attention as sitting and as walking and gathering the mind, one can actually see appear that mirage or impression, very strong, that is taken to be reality, and how one can liberate oneself from that sense that I'm a part, and everything that comes with it, the fear of what's going to happen, and the need to control, and the incapacity to control, and, you know, like, all this, the fear of death, and the fear of several existence, or the fear of no more existence. All this is very, can be very scary, but if we pay attention moment to moment and notice that experiences are disappearing all the time, you know. You take a breath, it comes in, it goes out, then it's inexistent. It's not there anymore. And so you just have the complete experience of something disappearing and becoming more and more intimate with everything disappearing. Your mother disappearing from your thoughts for a few minutes completely. Your future disappearing, inexistent in your thoughts. Your past inexistent. And then flicking in. I don't know if it's a verb, but I'll use it, you know, for a few moments and disappearing. The idea is to bring ease to the whole system. Oh yeah, things do appear and disappear. Health has appeared, it will disappear. You know, how I'm seen by the other will appear and will disappear. And so I'll finish with this. Paying attention to all this, of course, will completely or definitely change the value system and the way we relate to life. You know, and my sense from what I see and what I read and what I experience is it will give us a deeper, an access to inner ethics, like a kind of integrity, a kind of value system that will not be the one presented by the corporations, maybe, or something much deeper that will be able to recognize what really counts and what doesn't count. And a lot of that is called the opening of the heart, you know, the access to compassion, to joy, the access to equanimity, this balance of mind, knowing deeply that things arise and pass, that they're not all controllable, helps relax the mind in a very deep way, or the heart. And so this is the practice that we're doing here in a very imperfect way, you know, getting caught here and there, or maybe just moi, not you. So these are the few words on practice. I hope I'm not going too quickly through this, or in a way that makes sense only to me. You know. So I suggest we take just a little moment here to just relax into being and discovering how life is manifesting. The job is always the same, is on this path, as I understand it, is just to pay attention to what is here now. Let it be felt a little bit more completely. Letting sounds be heard. Heartbeat be known. Or just becoming intimate with the light going through the eyelids, the luminosity there. and seeing how suddenly this will be replaced by something else that will come in the foreground of attention. Something else will become alive and vibrant, known. Maybe a sound, a vibration, or a different part of the body will appear in the field of consciousness. Or maybe you'll notice the present mind state of boredom or tenderness or confusion or clarity or joy. Allow that ephemeral arising to be fully known or as fully as possible. Awake and calm in the middle of this discomfort or ease. May our practice reveal the ephemeral nature of reality and in its conditional nature, how it arises, things arise due to condition and pass when the condition are no longer there. May that free our mind. In our hearts, may we become compassionate beings, caring for each other.